Welcome to Messy Buns Podcast. I am Mary.
This is Elise. And today we're going to be talking all about Mary.
Which makes me so uncomfortable.
Well,
I'm more of an introvert and you're more of an extrovert.
I know, but it's so good.
I'm so excited.
Dance it out, girl.
I have such an ugly, scratchy voice sometimes.
You do?
Complimentary.
No. Girl, I'm so excited to talk about stuff with you. It's way better than my story.
I don't know. Your story is so dramatic.
I know. I feel like everybody probably like is exhausted emotionally from my story. So now let's lift him up.
Come out of the adoration chapel now that you needed to go take a break from life just from hearing her story. Yeah. Mine is a bit unexpected for me, even. Much less everybody else, I'm sure. Or anybody who knows me, except you.
Yeah, maybe. But it's awesome. Mary has become like a rock star.
Oh, stop it.
Okay. I mean, she's always been a rock star in my mind, but she's an actual rock star now.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, sure. I don't know. That just sounds so
Can
weird.
You tell him your best friend because I'm obsessed with you.
You're so silly. Well, a little bit of background. We just shared with you guys last time that we are both infertile, and that has played a very big role in our lives. And, you know, it's really made at least me the person I am today. And it's something now that I can say that I am grateful for, because I can see how much it's brought to my life. And that's what I love. I was just thinking today, like when we were in the height of infertility, we went to this infertility conference. They don't have many of those. So there were like not that many people. Like, we had to drive to Baton Rouge from New Orleans.
Are they all crying and weeping?
What in the world?
I just feel like from the outside world, that's what people think is like an infertility conference would just be like everybody crying.
I guess to a certain extent you would. But no, I mean, you know well that most of the infertile just kind of walk like everything's fine.
Right.
And a lot of it is hidden.
Right.
And so this was a good retreat. What was it, like a day, a few hours? It was great because like we got to meet other women who are experiencing the same things.
Did Chris go?
Yeah, it was like a couple thing. Yeah, I'm sorry, but it was good, and I formed some friendships that lasted out, that we continued to meet and share with each other. And the speaker was really good. It was a woman who experienced infertility for many years, but she finally got pregnant, which is great. But like I wanted to hear from the woman who never got pregnant.
Yeah.
I wanted to hear from the woman who didn't achieve a successful pregnancy, maintain it, and she was still okay.
Right, right.
And I can confidently say to you today that I am that woman. And oh my gosh. I mean, I never would have imagined, but it's brought so many good things in my life. And so that's what I want to share with the world, is that like, take a look around you, no matter what you're going through. What are the things that are happening in your life that are only happening because of that? And look for the positive things. Because it's so easy to focus on the negative.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if little fights with your friend or your husband, right. You have to step back and say, I'm only looking at the bad in this person.
Right.
And so it's so easy in our own lives to get angry at God and say, look at everything that's going wrong in my life. And of course I had those moments of anger, those weeks of anger. I mean, we talked about honesty last time. Right. We really need to be honest.
Well, and you're talking about the resurrection, and this is, you know, that's the thing, is like, you typically don't tell the story until you have the resurrection, because you don't want everybody to be like going through the muck and hearing your hopelessness at the times that you're hopeless,
Absolutely. And so it's been really helpful as I challenged myself. And of course, it's the Holy Spirit to say, like, these things are really good, and I would not have them if it weren't for infertility.
Right.
So rewind a little bit, start from the beginning, I guess.
Yes, please.
For my personal experience is growing up with a lot of pain, you know, even before my first menstrual cycle started, I experienced a lot of pain, that it was just like this new pain, and I would just be laying on the couch, and then eventually I got my first cycle. I was like, oh, that's what this that's what this
oh,
is.
I'm a woman.
But you know, this is what happens, I guess.
Right.
Well, over the years, and I was about 13 when it started, and it just got heavier and more painful as the years went on. And I mean, we can kind of discuss now. We mentioned women's health last time, but we're just kind of left to our to our own, right? It's this is what just happens to young women. Like, just deal with it. This is pain. So no one, like,
this is the life of a woman.
Just like accept it and move on.
Exactly. And stop complaining.
So I didn't know that the pain that I was experiencing was that abnormal.
Right.
You know, so I never went to the doctor, you know, just, you know, shove it under the rug. Everything's fine. And it was not fine. Finally, I was like 19 when I went to my first OBGYN appointment. And, you know, you go to the doctor typically, and you talked about this last time, expecting to find some answers.
Right.
Like, not even answers. Okay.
Yeah.
How about ask me some questions?
Right. Oh, like, my gosh. Yes.
Any other doctor appointment you go to. It is, they're asking you all, they're running tests, they're doing manual exams, or they're ordering diagnostic testing, they're drawing, I don't know, they're doing something.
Yeah.
And so I was eager to get to this appointment because naturally she's going to ask me some questions about my cycle. What, you know? So I go in and she does her thing, you know, the uncomfortable part. And I'm like, you know, my periods are pretty heavy and they're pretty painful. And so she says, okay, I can put you on a birth control pill. And for whatever reason at that time, I never took medicine a lot. I wasn't great at swallowing pills. It's just, I don't really have a reason. I just didn't want to be on it.
Yeah.
And so I said, I just don't, no, thank you. And she said, okay, I'll see you in a year or so, or whenever it is. Like, that was it. And walk out the room so discouraged. And this is something I've come to understand is not an isolated experience, that this is a lot of women's experiences. And so
that's all they ever know.
Oh, right. Yeah. And so that's just, we've accepted that as normal. Yeah. And that's the problem. And so my own mother didn't know any difference. My poor mom just watched me and my sister suffer through this agonizing pain that is supposed to be normal. Like, it just doesn't make sense when you look at it logically.
Right, right.
So years passed and pain just continued to get worse. No big deal, right? Until one morning I woke up with this very stabbing, sharp pain on one of my ovaries. I don't remember which side it was. And it was just, I couldn't breathe. I couldn't get out of bed, you know, so naturally.
Oh, and that's normal.
Oh, yeah, that's totally normal. I was, I think, 24 or 25 at this point. So I went to the doctor and finally got an ultrasound, which showed that I had a cyst. And she was, for the first time, I mean, and it had been, 12 years, she asked me, have you ever been diagnosed with endometriosis? I never heard of the word. I mean, common disease. Yeah, I'm like, excuse me, could you write that down for me?
Yeah,
I have no idea what you just said.
I'm going to Google that later. Okay.
Yeah. So she explained to me basically the cells on the inside of the uterus implant on the outside of the uterus and it causes pain and all this other stuff. I'm like, no. She ended up scheduling me for surgery that day. It was my birthday, by the way. Happy birthday to me. Yeah, happy birthday. You need surgery.
Happy birthday surgery.
Yeah. Basically I freaked out a little bit. She also told me I need to get on birth control, so I couldn't consider it at that point. But I never ended up taking it. And so my mom comes in with me to that pre-op and, you know, she explains the procedure. She says, she just gives me some, you know, information that there could be some endometriosis, that it's microscopic, too small for her to see, which case she can't remove it. It might come back and grow more. You know, okay, I don't know anything. You know, we're trained to trust our doctor.
Right.
So I'm just like, and I'm like terrified at this point. I'm like, okay, yes, ma'am. Just yes. Okay.
Right.
And then she brings out the papers and explains, basically, this is a paper that I want you to sign. It will give me permission if I get in there and everything is, you know, if it's bad enough, that it'll give me permission to remove an ovary or a tube or both or your entire uterus.
And you don't even know what you're signing for real.
It's so bizarre looking back that I would give, because I'm unconscious at that point. Like, I'm literally putting my fertility completely
in a woman's hands.
In a stranger's hands that I'm just trusting, knowing nothing, really very little about her. But I didn't know any better. I signed the paper and go into surgery. And luckily, I came out with all my organs intact still. And she told me, She considered removing an ovary or a tube or something, but she didn't. And so she told me also that I would feel better after this surgery, you know, because this should fix the pain, but I need to get on birth control right away.
Right.
So I took some samples home and considered it, but I never ended up taking it again. So after that, I had my first cycle and the pain was still there. Nothing was improved. So 3 months later, I was like, nothing is better. Right. I went and you know, I want to clarify first that most people are on birth control.
Right.
You know, like most people are not experiencing those type of severe symptoms. Yeah. And the plan is for, and she would tell me, you're on birth control. The goal is to preserve your fertility until you're ready to have children.
Right.
Come to find out later, there's really no research to indicate that endometriosis does not continue to grow even when you're on birth control. It's just taking away some of the symptoms sometimes.
So basically it's continuing on and you're completely unaware of it.
Exactly. I was aware. I was one of the rare few people who don't take birth control.
Right.
I happen to be aware that nothing, you know, like that the symptoms were still, the disease was still there. And
it's crazy. So it's just crazy. It's like other women are taking this and their body is literally screaming.
Yeah.
And they're not even aware of it. Sorry. Yeah. I just had that image.
No, it's true. It's true. And she had removed a cyst, like a 4-centimeter cyst in that surgery. So 3 months after that surgery, I went into a follow-up ultrasound that revealed another cyst was larger in place of that. And then there was an additional cyst. And so it was 3 months later, she told me I needed to schedule another surgery, at which point I did. Now, at this point, Chris and I, my husband now, we were together, not engaged yet, but planned to be engaged. And they tell you that infertility is a risk of, you know, as a side effect of endometriosis. But I don't know, like, I'm just so naive. I'm like, I'm not going to have a problem getting pregnant. Right. You know, I'm just,
well,
I'm
no,
kind of
no
half
girl,
glass full kind of girl.
Well, no. Like, no girl ever thinks, like, you start playing with baby dolls when you're a little girl. Right. And you're like, this is just, you do this.
You get married or whatever. When you're ready, you have a baby.
Yeah.
Like, that's just
how
we think.
Absolutely.
And I was certainly
so it's not
no
weird
different.
That you,
I
like,
guess not. Yeah.
You're not naive. That's every girl.
Well, this is true. And even though someone's telling me, hey, there's a pretty good chance you cannot get pregnant, I'm like, no, I'll be fine. So, you know, anyway, Chris was great and amazing throughout all of this. Just a huge support, part of my support system. And
that you had
him. I know it was really so needed, and he was just amazing and still is about it all. But I scheduled that next surgery for, I think it was September that same year. I had the first one in June. No, that October. I scheduled it for October. And in the meantime, my mom had told me about something called the Creighton model, which I had never heard of before. And she mentioned to me, but you know how moms like mention stuff to you and that is the sole reason you don't want to do something? That was this situation. So I was like, okay.
You're like, yeah.
I mean, so, but then my dad heard Dr. Hilgers, who was the creator of this method, along with some other people, on the radio. And he said, you need to turn this on and listen to this guy. And so he starts talking about this whole idea of birth control, which you remember I declined multiple times when it was offered to me because I just didn't want it. I wanted something different, better. I can't even describe it. And he was like, we don't prescribe birth control, which is unheard of for most people to hear of a doctor who doesn't prescribe birth control.
Oh, completely unheard of.
But it was beyond that, the way that he was talking about the woman as a whole person and really seeing her fertility as intimately connected with her health, with just her, and just seeing her for more than just some organs that we may take out if we decide, you know, like it was so different. Yet both doctors were saying they were going to do the same thing.
Right.
There was something so different about this person. I was like, I need this. And so it had to be the Holy Spirit, just guiding me. And so I decided to start doing, actually was charting before I found out I needed another surgery, which is another Holy Spirit. Like, why did I decide to start doing this if I thought everything was probably fine? But it worked out well because I had, you need 2 months of charting in the Creighton model system for them to gather information. So basically, Creighton is a way that you're monitoring the signs our bodies are giving off, you know, signs and symptoms of what's going on underneath. Like the external observations are really good, excellent, actually, reflection of what's going on internally in many different ways.
Wait, that stuff in our underwear has purpose?
It has so much purpose. You don't even know. It gets me so excited.
I say that excited. Because I know she'll get excited.
I know, stop it. You're so bad. No, I'm kidding. So anyway, so but the doctor needs a certain amount of time to be able to kind of pull out certain information. So about two months or so is generally what they need, And so I just happen to have the perfect amount, like right before the surgery, that I could send off. At the time, we didn't have any of those doctors locally, to Dr. Hilders. And he had this service where he would look at your chart, make some recommendations. Oh my gosh, I wish I had the letter here. But
I know, gosh.
Basically, it's unbelievable. So where I had waited so long to go to a doctor to ask me a few questions, like in person, right? That first visit.
Right.
And she asked me not one thing. I never spoken to this Dr. Hilders before in my life. I mailed him across states to Omaha my chart. Right. And a few other pieces of information. I mailed him, you know, pictures of my family, et cetera. And just from looking at my chart, I mean, he was able to say you are at risk for like blocked fallopian tube, subfertility, like all these fancy medical terms.
Right.
It was unbelievable. I mean, and I never met him. And so they told me basically right before my next surgery that I was like, I could go there for surgery.
Right, right.
And so I went to my pre-op and I told them I was canceling the surgery. And it was thank God that I did. Because it took my first airplane trip ever to Omaha, Nebraska.
Woohoo!
Yeah, Omaha. So exciting, where it's like snows and stuff, which we're from New Orleans. It's not something we're used to. And I had my second surgery there, which was a diagnostic surgery. And they just said, had I gone through with that surgery locally, they assumed that she would have removed everything because it had gotten so bad. And she warned me that. She said, if I can't get rid of everything, you know, it could get worse. She straight up warned me of that. So I came back home for a little bit, scheduled another surgery to go back where they were actually going to they needed to do a laparotomy and really open me up to get everywhere.
And a laparotomy is when they actually cut you basically from side to side.
It's a C-section scar.
Not using a robot and doing these tiny little things.
That they do now. They weren't doing it yet at that time. Right. So Chris actually proposed to me a couple of days before that surgery. The night before we left, but it was a great distraction from that time. He came with me to all the surgeries, just so supportive, which was, you know, even before we were married. And
my brother just, from another mother.
No, just really beautiful, and a beautiful way to start a marriage. But that's something else, like just getting married, it's like you don't. Everybody's so scared about the in sickness part, I feel like.
Right.
And it's like, man, it drew us so much closer together having this suffering. It's just a choice that we have to make.
Well, and I don't even think, honestly, that people, when they're saying those vows, are like, oh, yeah, the sickness part. I don't even think they think about
it. You're probably right.
You know what I mean? It's like, oh, yeah, and sickness, you know, but yeah, we're in love
now.
That's
never going to happen. Whatever.
Yeah, like, oh, we're so in love.
Man, I'm just so grateful for both the infertility and the surgeries and the pain. You know, so anyway, fast forward, the pain did get better. It kind of fluctuated, but it never ended up going away.
Right.
So over years, I had several more surgeries. Up until recently, actually, my most recent NAPRO surgery, it had gotten so bad that I was in the emergency room for every cycle, the last three cycles before my last surgery. And so I finally got...
This poor girl, literally, I witnessed her doubled over in pain, couldn't walk, and literally, that was just her cycle.
Right, yeah.
And we were in the ER. We met you guys in the ER.
Right, because we have a daughter, I wouldn't be able to take care of Bella when my period would come. And thankfully, they were able to meet us at the hospital this one particular day and take care of Bella while Chris wheeled me into the back. And morphine was the only thing that would touch it. So anyway.
Which is a powerful, powerful drug.
Right. I know. I'm just kind of like, yeah, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But
no big deal.
But you, again, you live with this pain. Yeah. It becomes normal. Yeah. And it becomes a part of your life, right. really. So that it's like weird when it's not there anymore. Yeah. Because
you're like, but this is what I do. Like,
yeah, this is just a part of my life. So we went through that experience. Luckily, scheduled another surgery. They did an MRI and found adenomyosis, which is endometriosis within the actual muscle itself of the uterus. So it's a little bit more tricky. They have to actually cut out, you know, the whole uterus or parts of the uterus. Right. But my NAPRO doctor gave us that option. That's the thing with NAPRO. Like, they're treating the woman as a whole. They're looking at everything together and they're taking time.
Right.
That's the difference. Like,
well, and your case was like, you have extreme rare, you know, like typically, literally people have like one surgery. Like my sister had, well, she had her, her exploratory a long time ago, but then she had one surgery and had a baby.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And not all endometriosis is created the same either. There's different stages, and then sometimes it just comes back sooner than others. And I was kind of, you know, but the NAPRO doctors, they have researched this. They don't research it that much in just regular medical school, but Dr. Hildreth has this fellowship where they go and they have researched it so much more. They take special paths in surgery. They do anti-adhesion techniques. So he gave me the option. Okay, we can remove the uterus. Like, you've been through enough. It would be understandable to remove it, but it's not typical for a NAPRO doctor to remove organs. Like, they just don't do that. Right. Like, I never had
to
sign that paper.
They're trying to preserve fertility with every single bit of their being.
I never had to sign that paper with my NAPRO doctor that I did before. And so he gave me the option. He said he could cut this off at my uterus and sew it back together and I'd still be able to get pregnant.
Which you then called your Franken uterus.
He called it a monster uterus. because it was almost twice as big as it should have been. So it was after that. Going into it, the pain was just all the time. It wasn't just in my during my period, but I woke up from surgery feeling instant relief, completely different. I could feel a weight being lifted, which it literally was.
Yeah, there was literally like most of your uterus.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the story. That's the journey towards pain relief. But infertility obviously is weaved in, you know, throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until...
Because you had... That was your 11th?
11th surgery,
11th surgery. Let's just say that again. Right. 11th
I don't want to hear the word surgery ever again. But so this was 2018. Back in 2015 or so was really the height of the infertility journey, and it was at the point where I mentioned this last time, that it's just the suffering is just ridiculous, the emotional and mental suffering, and they compare it to cancer. Actually, people who experience cancer, the infertility, at least the emotional part aspect, is like the stress. And there was this one point where it got the worst that it ever had gotten. And I remember I got a false positive pregnancy test. Now, it was a faint line, but at that point I didn't think false positives were possible. And
I didn't quite
believe it, like you said, but and the typical thing is you go get your blood drawn and from there. And so I did, and I just waited for the call, which I actually, for some reason, was pretty hopeful, because I didn't think you'd get a false positive, and it was not true. And that's when
Like literally the worst thing. Somebody who's infertile and doing this month after month after month for years to have happen.
And that's where the anger for God came. Yeah. I said, and my honesty at that point was, not only can I not get pregnant, but you can't give me the satisfaction of a actual negative pregnancy test.
Right.
Like, I'm done.
It's cruel.
That's the perfect word for it. It's cruel. And I remember I was in our old house. I remember the room. I remember the day I was by myself. Chris wasn't home. And God had removed consolation for me at that point too. Yeah. It was like, on top of everything, like, you're not going to let me feel a sense of peace.
Right.
What? I never in my life.
Where did you go?
Like, I'm like, here. Yeah. That is a moment where I saw, okay, this is how people lose faith. I get it.
Right.
I get it. Right. And I've never been that low.
Right.
And it was a voice not long after that in my head saying, I was a youth minister in the past, like you working mm-hmm. with youth all my mm-hmm. life. I'm this Catholic. He goes, you say that you love me. Do you mean it?
For realsies?
Do you yeah. mean it? Like you're yeah. constantly saying you love me, you know, like we all say that. Oh yeah, right, I love right. you. I love you. Yeah. Well, you can't act like this when you don't get what you want.
Well, it's like the scripture with Peter. It's like, you know, do you love me? And he's like, yeah, Lord, you know,
right? It's like,
and
well,
do you love
okay,
me?
Well,
do you love
like
me?
It.
Yeah.
Act
and then like he it. Denies him when it gets hard,
exactly.
you know?
And so that I have to look at myself in the mirror at that point. And it's like, here I am not getting what I want. Right. Am I going to choose to love you?
Am I
going
to be the kid on the floor? Not. Going, I want a baby.
Right. Like, here I am not feeling you. Am right, I going to choose right. to love you? We talked
yes.
about this too.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
not a feeling.
It's an act of the will.
And here I'm wanting these feelings.
Yeah.
So that day I made the decision. Yeah. Like I'm going to
I'm yeah.
going to mean these words that I say.
Right.
And so I still didn't have any consolation, but you have to
right.
choose to love. And that's
right.
what we still have to do daily.
Right.
But that's when I discovered St. Teresa of Avila. Those people like are
her.
Fangirling over the little flower. I've got
yeah.
I've got major respect for her. Like totally love her. But like St. Teresa of Avila. As my girl, because I started reading her quotes at that point, and I felt like personality wise, like she just kind of really spoke to me, and she kind of pulled me out of a really dark place. I saved it, I have to show you some of the quotes,
yeah,
because it just made me laugh. Like, I felt like she had like
she's
a little
sassy.
Attitude, she
yes.
was a little sassy.
I always love sassy things,
yes, and maybe it was just the way I interpreted it, but anyway, it was what I needed at the time,
yeah, absolutely.
And from then on, I said, okay, like. Here we are. And we were discerning adoption at the time. But Chris was ready way before I was. And because for me, it meant accepting that I could never get pregnant.
Right,
and that's not
right.
true.
It's not true. But
I was
that's
just never raised
like.
With adoption. Like Chris, it was just openly talked about at his home more. And
right,
my family
right.
certainly wasn't against it. But I knew no one. It was
yeah.
never discussed. It was
yeah.
just like, this is what people do when they can't get pregnant.
Right. Exactly.
Chris would have done it either way.
Right.
And so I just needed to get there on my own time, and he allowed me to do that. Thankfully, it was the only reason I got there within about a year or so. And so it was not long after this experience, I said, all right, God, I'm ready, you know.
Yeah.
And so we started the adoption process, and it was just under a year. We got to meet Bella, our little girl, Isabella. We got her the day she was born. And this is the first blessing, guys, that I'm talking about would not have happened if it weren't for our infertility. And she's
girl
the
is
absolute
special.
Joy
yes.
of our life. But it doesn't stop there. Like, yeah. Right before Bella was born is when I started, like, obviously I'm going through this whole infertility journey, this pain journey. And I'm realizing, why in the world did it take me 12 years to get diagnosed? What? Excuse me? Like... One in 10 women, I think it's the same as PCOS. I have to double check that.
Know.
But it,
oh
let's
gosh.
Just, bottom line, it's a common disease.
Yes.
Pain is
yeah.
not, the extreme pain is not normal.
Right.
So many young women are going through this. It should not have taken me so long to get diagnosed
right.
because the disease was causing damage to my fertility for so
right.
long.
Right.
And doctors are just prescribing the pill. Which is
right.
what happened to me, and not look doing any investigation
right.
into the underlying
right.
problem. And Creighton, if I had started using Creighton right away, I would have been diagnosed and treated within months, maybe a year.
Right.
Period.
Right.
And so who knows, maybe I might be able to get pregnant today. I don't know. I'll never know that now.
Obviously.
But
yeah.
Man, my chances would have been much better. I wouldn't have experienced so much pain, like physical
right.
pain, emotional pain. So I just was super motivated, and along with Elise and some other friends, to start this ministry, you could call it, but it's just this educational kind of outreach kind of thing called Taking Back the Terms. And that's when it was born, to say, like, we need to do a better job educating
right.
young women, really women of all ages, men, couples, priests, parishes, Catholic professionals, because we need to know about this.
Well, when it was out of your love, like, this is the thing that people don't realize, is like, it was out of Mary's love. Like, she didn't want anybody to have to go through what she had been through. And she's so passionate about that, that it drove you to do this, you know?
Well, it's so unnecessary.
Yeah.
Like, women don't have to experience so many of these things. Yeah. And it's not a miracle pill. It's not going to fix everybody's infertility, but we're talking about health here.
Right.
That needs to be our goal,
right?
To be healthy.
Right.
And so that's the most important thing. And I needed purpose for all the things that I've been going through. Like, I wanted my experience to help somebody else. And it gave me purpose. So Taking Back the Terms was born. And Elise and I did a lot of speaking together. It was a lot of fun. You can go check out our early YouTube. So I have a YouTube channel, too. It's called Taking Back the Terms. Oh, man, it's about 4 years old now. I can't believe it's been so long.
She's been rocking it.
But I've been growing so much, and God's just been developing me and helping me to understand the world and learn so many new things and process and just grow my understanding of things to be able to help and serve the public, period.
Right.
And so, and then the other thing that, so those are two.
Let's, I mean, you're not just doing a Facebook page. Mary is about like very close to actually becoming now a Creighton practitioner, which is a professional. Can you like just kind of describe how that came about? Because you go from just like doing these videos as like somebody who loves what it is and then actually like are pursuing this.
So it was about maybe 2 or 3 years into it. It just kind of all lined up. We have our local clinic, a Hope Woman's Clinic, which is attached to Woman's New Life Center. Now it's all combined, by the way. It's called Woman's New Life Clinic. I don't know if you knew that.
I just found it out.
Yeah,
okay. Just found it out.
Like just now when I told you?
Like literally today.
Awesome. And so anyway, they kind of approached me and they were having a new training class start to become a practitioner. And it's something you and I have talked about one day, but it just kind of came knocking on my door. Chris and I discerned it and it was the right move. And it really, I mean, with all I had been doing, my knowledge could only go so far. And it was kind of at that point, just from being a user of the system and talking about my own personal experiences. So this was putting it into action and it worked out. Thank God, paved the way to start training to become a practitioner, which is basically the person who walks with you and teaches you how to chart. We're also trained to, you know, teach women how to not only observe the biomarkers, but chart them accurately. And then it's my job to identify if anything's abnormal. So it's just so cool that we can do this.
So
it's a 13-month.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. It's a 13-month training program. So this is rigorous.
Yeah, it's
not easy. This is a legit professional
program
oriented towards health. So I'm almost finished, thank God. I am seeing clients. Yeah.
What I wanted to, because when you say biomarkers, I think, you know,
it's very confusing.
You're avoiding saying the word.
Well, yeah, it's mucus, the M word.
Yeah, the M
word. Yeah. Well, but the biomarkers kind of represent just looking at the chart. There are certain things that indicate that a woman is at risk for several things. So I can look at a woman's chart and say, you know,
based off of her cervical mucus that she's observed.
Not just the cervical mucus, but patterns of bleeding, the length of certain phases in the cycle. We have multiple phases,
the
menstrual cycle. I hope so, yeah. But so all the different things we're looking at, I can say, hey, you're at risk for low progesterone. You're at risk, high risk for miscarriage. You're at risk for subfertility. You're at risk for ovarian cysts, some hormonal abnormalities,
body markers,
even cancer. Yeah. I mean, all the things, it's really not too good to be true. So this is what I'm talking about, health. This is applicable throughout a woman's entire procreative life. It's amazing. I know, it blows my mind. But anyway, that's what I'm training to become a practitioner now. So it's given me a lot more credibility to be able to help people in a totally different way.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And speaking to and just educating the
public. Can you believe that, like, okay, so you go from like, I'm going to have a baby, no problem, whatever, and then dealing with infertility, which could have wrecked you, and like the Lord has brought out this ministry that is affecting like hundreds and hundreds of women because Mary basically does these videos that bring all of this knowledge to them at a very accessible and easy to understand. And then from that, he calls her then to go even further. Mm-hmm. And so now she's actually like a professional at this and like is a Creighton practitioner. It can actually help women directly, it just blows my mind, because literally you could have just been like, yeah, this didn't even help me, you know, da 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 da, and gotten like, you know, I've been to all these surgeries, and you didn't, but because you see the value in it.
That's the beauty of it. It's about health.
Right.
Like, oh, right. My good friend Lisa Acadiana, shout out Lafayette, Creighton practitioner, go find her. But I kind of borrowed her saying. She says, I can't give you a baby. Your medical consultant can't give you a baby. This chart can't give you a baby. Only God can give you a baby. But I can give you as much knowledge as I can. I can give you as many answers as I can. I promise I'm going to be honest with you.
Amazing.
So our goal is to get you healthy.
Right.
And so it really changes the focus
right.
on a woman's health, on herself. Like, what is right. making her right. whole again? And this is something you're not going to find anywhere else.
No, because they this treat kind of it like approach. A separate entity, you know, right. like even insurance companies like will be like, oh, we don't cover that.
Right.
Like if you right. have infertility, we don't cover that. Right. It's not about your health. It's not about, you know, like anything. It's literally like, oh, we'll put that over there on the shelf. Yet it's completely integrated. Your health is completely integrated in all parts yeah. of your body. It's yeah, not
if your fertility
this,
isn't working well. Well, your right. health is, there's something wrong right. that we need to address. Right. It's right. not this separate part that we can just leave out.
Right.
And a lot of women, so many women have these health issues. Right. And so typically doctors, like we said, women's health, you're kind of on your own. Well, with NAPRO, with Creighton, you're not on your own.
Right.
Like your practitioner is working very close with you and your right. medical consultant. It's just a different world.
Right.
So we just want people to know about that. So that's kind of what I'm into.
Just one of the many things. So yeah. let's talk about... like that in itself is just huge. And now, can we talk about victories?
The other thing?
Yeah.
That other thing. So I know it doesn't sound like it, but I'm just, look, just take it in that, what I'm saying, and just try not to hear the sound of my voice, but I've just always been into hip hop and rap. I mean, it's just like in my bones. See, this is what I'm talking about. I don't even believe the words are coming out of my mouth. But it's just a part of me. Like that, like I've always loved that kind of music. And it just like when the beat gets inside, I just can't even. So
and we're not talking like cheesy. Like she's legitimately really good.
I didn't even say anything yet.
I mean, I'm just going to say that. Sorry. You said rap.
Well, yes, I like to listen to rap music.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
No, it's
I just
okay.
am so
You're
excited.
So excited.
I am so excited.
But you know, so anyway, I just I do like to write. Like I blog. I've been blogging for a while too. By the way, what is my WordPress? Mary G. Bruno WordPress. I'm somewhere on there.
I know,
you
she
could
does
find
everything.
Me. But I just it was actually near this low point that I had in infertility that I started writing. I actually started. I just told you this recently. I started. Because like we get through these difficult things with humor
right,
and we make
right.
fun of ourselves and oh, we're bitter, yeah. right? Like we're oh, yeah. so bitter. Yeah. So I wrote a song. No, I started as a stand-up comedy routine.
Oh, I didn't.
Because I had all these jokes and they were awesome. It was like all my friends, like your husbands look at you and you get pregnant. Like my husband looks at me and I start my period. Like it felt like this stand-up, but
right,
I could never
right.
do that. So I was like, I'm going to write a rap. And so that's what had happened. I wrote a rap and I was like, I don't know if this is any good or not, but it's funny. And that was when I was real bitter. So anyway, so then I kind of got through to a place of peace that was better. And I wrote a more serious rap and I didn't really show it to anyone. But I felt like it was pretty good, but I certainly didn't think it was actually any good. And I literally just emailed it to myself and that was it. I like put it away until my goodness, it was what, 2 years ago. What's you were over at my house.
Wow.
I don't know what we were talking about. And I was just like, we're very close, but yeah, it was still a yeah. vulnerable thing for me to share this with anybody because
right,
it was such an
right.
intimate part of my like feelings and thoughts of what I was going through with infertility. And so I was like, let me just show you this. I was like, let me show you what I wrote like years ago. And so I showed it to her and she actually like, she was saying how good it was and didn't sound like she was lying at all. And I was like, really? Like, you think this is like really good? And she was like, yeah, right? I mean, do you want
to? Oh my gosh. I mean, like the
Don't inflate it or anything.
No. Okay, stop. Because this is the problem is like, because if my husband was here right now, like she is legitimately very good. The way that she writes is just intelligent, clever. And, you know, you would think that this like little white girl, you'd be like, are you serious? Like, this is going to be cheesy, right? And I you know, music was very a part of me growing up. I was in a very competitive musical area. So I'm pretty...
This is new to me.
I'm really snobby when it comes to music and art and things like that. So like, you know, and there's a lot of... There isn't a lot of women, you know, Christian rappers, sure. But when you find them, they're ridiculously cheesy and they're so put on. And Mary is just, there's literally no words to say. She's just literally good. Like, she's actually a legitimate rapper and is very good.
That. And the goal in writing it was not to be about infertility. I wanted it specifically, like, it was for me about infertility, but this first song called Battle Wounds, by the way, I wanted it to be something that anybody struggling with anything could relate to. Just very something you can connect with. And it was so cathartic for me. Just like, I just would yell. I didn't share this. I just would like rap it to myself when I was struggling. And it was like my anthem. Like it was like, it's about my battle wounds and how like, man, they're just like I'm going to wear them like some fine jewelry. Like, these are my battle wounds. I'm not scared of them anymore. I'm actually proud of them. Like, they're making me into this woman. Like,
can you wrap it?
No.
Dang it.
No. So at the right time, you'll hear it, but cause I have to record it first. But bottom line is that's what it is. And so, yeah, it's crazy what people could do for us. Like, I just didn't have the confidence. And so it was that moment that she gave me this confidence that, like, I could believe in myself. It was the smallest thing, y'all, but this is how we can support each other and build each other up and help us to like, thrive and, like, grow these gifts God has given us. And so it wasn't long after that she was organizing this retreat. She was a youth minister at the time, and I was working this retreat. It was the first one that you planned. It was awesome. And you flew in Oscar 210 Rivera to be, was he keynote that year or not? Or was it next? Or he was keynote. No, you were keynote that first year. But he did.
No, he was keynote.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, he did a talk or several, and he was supposed to perform a concert. So we're literally like, I just passed him. And
when I had told him that
he did.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, well, that makes a lot more sense then. Because I know y'all can't see me, but I'm just a very white girl, okay? And so I'm past, but I have this confidence now out of nowhere. And I am, and he stops me and he was like, hey, my wife's a fan of yours. And I'm like, first of all, is he talking to me? I'm like, oh, and why the heck is his wife a fan of mine? And so he evidently, it had to be through you because you guys are friends. She was a fan of Taking Back the Terms and had seen our videos. I was like, I was like, cool. I'm a fan of yours. And he was like, really? Yeah. And yeah. And then the next words came out of my mouth that I like, couldn't get back into my mouth. I literally was like, I'm a rapper too. What he must have been thinking, like looking at me and hearing those words come out of my mouth. I don't even know. And he was like, really? I don't know. That was generous. But so he was like, well, do you want to come on stage and like rap something with me? And I was like, yeah, don't have to think about it. It was just such a blessing. It's just so much that confidence. I can't even tell y'all. So it was the middle verse of Battle Wounds that I shared with him. And he was like, he too affirmed me. He was like, this is actually good.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? Like, what in the world? Okay. And y'all was like, we got on stage. It was like, God created me to be on that stage and perform, like to rap and to do this song. And it was just, a few hours.
Right.
I didn't get to prepare. I mean, this was just last minute. And the fact that I was able to get up there and not just stare into space.
No, she freaking got up there and did it like a boss. Like, it wasn't this like, da-da-da-da. Like, it was literally, like, the kids were freaking out. Like, it was so good.
It was awesome. And so that started Oscar and I's collaboration, which we're continuing today, actually finally making some progress on. But the next retreat, a whole year later, we wrote a song together that I performed with him again. And now we, after that, we started another song, which I think was like our best so far, and we literally just recorded it. Y'all, it's so awesome. Good. I'm not even gonna lie, y'all. Like, it's so good.
Yeah.
And so we're gonna be releasing that soon. Maybe by the time this comes out, it's probably already exists. Yeah. But so anyway, just to bring it all together, y'all, like, I can't even tell you, these three huge, like, significant parts of my life, these gifts have blossomed because of infertility.
Right.
Period. So I just, like, I challenge you, no matter what you're struggling in with life, what are the things that are good that are happening in your life?
Yeah.
What is God putting into your life because of this? Maybe he wants you to become this person. Like, God's plan for me was not to have a baby. His plan is for other things that are better than that. And it's hard for us to see that as humans. Like, we have our own plans. Yeah. But no, like, I know we know when we say God's plan is better, but I'm living better.
Right.
That I didn't plan for myself. Well, so again, there's hope.
There, like, and I've said this recently, is like, you're just fruitful. That's all I see when I look at her, is like, she has just blossomed. She has, like, literally just let go and allowed the Lord to come into this suffering. And because of that, what is being birthed out of her literally is just beauty in so many different ways, and is helping so many different people. So she is a mother in creator of life in all these other ways. So
I'm so glad you said that, because especially in our Catholic culture, this word fruitful is really underused. We think we're just fruitful, like we're just supposed to get married and have babies, and we are called to so much more fruitfulness than that, whether we can have children or not. Like, even the women who are having all the babies, like, you're called, you have gifts, like, outside of that we're all called to use for the gift of the world.
And we're going to
speak to through us.
I'm sorry, I totally cut you off there.
No, you didn't. You're good.
Well, we're going to do a whole podcast.
Yeah, so I don't want to give all the goodies away right now.
Yeah, but I think that's a great transition into our next podcast, where we talk all about that, because it's something that we're both really passionate about, and that we've had to actually live, you know, out. So,
and it also kind of explains our title, Messy Buns. We talked a little bit about it in our first three episodes. That's what you call them, right? Episodes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, we kind of joked about making messy lives look good. And maybe it doesn't look good, honestly. But, like, look, I love a messy bun. I think most people do. You know, like, messy bun and getting it done. And so that's what we hope to bring to you guys. Like, there's just always hope. Period.
Absolutely.
So we're so glad that y'all are here. Thanks for sticking around to hear our life stories, pretty much. We've been busy, and I hope that you can appreciate it. And we hope you continue on this ride with us. I am Mary.
I am Elise.
And this is Messy Buns. Wait for it. Wait for it. That's called a beat drop, in case you didn't know. I know I'm white, but I know what a beat drop is. Y'all got me Victrix. I didn't even say my rap name. Victrix. V-I-C-T-R-I-X.
Find her on Instagram.
Coming for you.
She's coming. You will not be disappointed.
You're too sweet. Just stop it. But don't.
I'm number one fan. Well, I guess Chris is technically, but you know what? I'm real.
You know.
I'm going to be there screaming.
Everyone's
the first concert.
Invited to the Victrix party. Peace out, y'all.